So the first item that we will consider today is advisory opinion request 2021-11 DCCC DSCC submitted by Mark Elias, Jacqueline Lopez, Rachel Jacobs, Shanna Ruhlbach, and Elizabeth Poston. We are joined today by Ms. Jacobs, Ms. Lopez, and Ms. Poston, the Questors Council, who are available to respond to questions that commissioners may have. I want to say good morning. Good morning. I see two. There you go. I see all three. Good morning, ladies. We also have Kevin Paulson and Robert Knott from OGC here to discuss the matter. So I'll turn to counsel. Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 21-40-A, 21-40-B, and 21-40-C, which respond to a request from the DSCC and DCCC. The request asks whether text messages sent to the committee's supporters via short code text messaging programs are public communications under the Act and Commission regulations. Drafts A and C conclude that the text messages sent as part of these programs are public communications. Draft B reaches the opposite conclusion, finding that these text messages are not public communications. We did not receive any comments on the request. We received two comments on the drafts from the Requesters Council and 64 comments from the public. I'm happy to address any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Commissioner Cooksey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the appearance by counsel for the party committees here, and I also really appreciated their very thorough written comments on the drafts, but I would like to know if they have any other presentation or comments they'd like to make on the three drafts.
I don't think so. I think the written comments are the gist of it. I think the last thing I would add that we talked about collectively is we want to stress that while we think this is a very unique situation, and I understand that we're reaching large numbers of people with these text messages, we think it's unique because we are building our own audience, right? So it's really not the general public that we're communicating with. But we want to stress to the commission, we don't think that this is like some enormous like loophole that then people are going to drive a truck through in the scope of what's a public communication, because it is incredibly unique. As a practitioner, I can't think of any other type of communication that fits within this interesting narrow lane where we really are recruiting our own audience. We wouldn't even think that it would apply to other forms of texting, like the kind of peer-to-peer texting people do where they can just blast text people without consent. So I want to stress that we're not asking the commission to create a huge loophole here. We are just saying, when you read the plain text of what a general public communication is, this type of communication really just doesn't fit within that scope, because again, we are creating our own audience.
Thank you. Any further questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So suppose every person in the country opted in, and you were literally reaching every person in the country, would you still say that because they opted in, this was not general public political advertising?
Well, I don't, although the committees would love that reality, it's not ever going to happen, right? Because you have to either text the short code to opt in, or you have to give us your phone number in response to a clear disclaimer saying you're opting in to receive our messages. So there's just no way that would ever happen. The only reason the lists are as big as they are is because the committees are doing their nationwide committees, right? Campaigns would never have an opted in list this large. It's really just a testament to the number of people across the country that support the committees, but it is anywhere near the size of the country. It never will be.
Well, but you're not answering my question, because your position and the position of draft B, I guess it is that because people opt in, it can't be considered general public political advertising. And I don't know where this opt-in requirement would come from. It's not in the law.
It is. It's in the TCPA and it is in the CTIA regulation. So it's both the Federal Telephone Consumer Protection Act requires consent to blast text, as well as the CTIA regulations at the
right, Congress. No, I meant in the FICA. When you're saying I know it's part of other laws that you have to get permission. And yet somehow I still get texts from people that I have no idea who they are.
I can help you with that after the meeting.
Well, I don't want to accept that offer because that might be deemed improper influence, and I wouldn't want that. But thank you for the
text end back. They'll stop.
I know that. What I wonder is, you know, how do they get my phone number that they are texting me? But that's
actually an important point, Commissioner, that differentiates the request from the kinds of text you're talking about. The short code texting list, we can't swap or sell our list. It's only our audience. So you will never be able to, like, the DCCC can't short code text the DSCC's list and vice versa. It is only your list. Even if a federal candidate has one campaign and then starts another campaign, they can't share that list between campaigns. So it's really narrow to your audience at the time. And I didn't mean to evade your question. I understand it. But I think the reason this is different is because that will never happen. So yes, in theory, like, in a dream world, like, we could get everyone in the country to do this, but we never will, because again, we're building our own audience. There's no way to mass build the list to encompass the entire country. Why it's not a public communication.
Okay. So suppose it's not the entire country, it's just every Democrat in the country.
Oh, what a dream. I'm not trying to be evasive. It's just that it'll never get there because we take so much effort. Like, it's kind of the same thing as saying, what if every Democrat in the country followed the DSCC's Twitter? Great. I don't think that would make it a public communication. They still opted to do it. So I guess my answer to your question is no, but it's extraordinarily unlikely. I think of the same way as, like, if you follow our Instagram, our Facebook, or our Twitter, you're opting to see our communications. It's never going to be the whole country because people have to seek it out and do it.
All right. So wait a minute. I want to make sure did you give me an answer in there and then quickly say, but it's never going to happen?
I mean, in theory, yes, if we got every single Democrat in the country to opt in to receive our communications, they're choosing to be our audience, but it would never occur because by nature of the communication.
So it's your position that if every Democrat in the country opted in, it still wouldn't be a general public political
advocate. If every Democrat in the country followed our Twitter account, would that turn it into a public communication? I don't think so. I don't think that it's the number of people that matter. I think it's the question is, are you actually paying to advertise to the general public? And here we are not, because we're building our own audience one person at a time. They are choosing to communicate just with us, receive just our content. It's not like a newspaper subscription where you subscribe to a newspaper to get the content of the newspaper, and then you get the advertisements, like, because they're paying to access you, right? It's not the normal content. Here, it's only our content. You're subscribing and signing up to only receive our content and nobody else's. It's just fundamentally different than advertising.
All right. I hear your argument. I just don't find it persuasive. I think at a certain point, okay, you are reaching the general public, that you get to certain numbers and you're already at pretty high numbers. I think you are reaching the public. And as I said, nowhere in the FICA does it say.
But if my Twitter account reaches.
Really? You're going to interrupt me?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. I should not have.
I'm trying to explain my position. I thought it might be helpful to you to know why I'm going to vote the way I am, but, you know. If you're not interested, we could just vote. That's fine.
No, I apologize. The Zoom format is new to me, and I apologize for interrupting.
Okay. I'll give you that one. Everybody struggles with Zoom, even 2 years in. My point is that I think at a certain point, you are reaching enough people that it really has to be considered public. And I think you've reached that point. And as you have described the text messaging program that you have, and you are still paying, you're paying per message. Nothing in the FICA says anything about opt-in as being part of our definition of, or as an exclusion from the definition of general public political advertising. And it seems to me that this is very analogous from a lot of other media that we have considered in the past. Your comment used the word outdated several times, but I think to the contrary, what I am trying to do is make sure that new technology does not obviate the statute and the regulations that are on the book. Congress intended for mass communications to that had certain political content to be regulated in some sense, technology is changing the way people communicate, but I think we still have an obligation to try and give meaning to what's in the statute and what's in our regulations. So I won't belabor the point. I plan to support draft C. And that's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Any other discussion? Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lopez, could you comment on the piece of reasoning that I think is in draft A and draft C, that the per message fee structure is somehow relevant to determining whether this is a public communication, and why that's wrong?
Sure. So I think you can't look at whether there is any fee associated with the communication and use that to determine whether or not it is a public communication. There are a lot of communications that the commission does not treat as public communications that involve fees to send. So emails, to build a website, right? There are fees for all of that. What you need to look at is, are you paying a fee to access a general public audience built by somebody else? And here we are not. Yes, we're paying a fee. We outline it in the draft. There's fees we pay to the CTIA, there's fees we pay to the vendor and to the carriers. However, we pay those fees to compensate them for their time and the work they're doing to provide the services, but we are accessing our own audience. We are not paying to access someone else's audience. So it is very different here. And I think honestly, you just go back to the plain text of the word general public political advertising. The 2006 E&J lays out that advertising connotates paying a fee. But it's general public advertising. So that fee has to be tied to advertising to the general public for that fee to make the communication general public advertising. And here the fee is only tied to us reaching our own audience, not a general public audience.
And the commission's regulations indicate that, you know, things like a party committee website are not public communications. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, and I think this situation is very similar, and draft B notes this and explains it, I think, very well, that this is just like a party committee website where individuals are seeking out to receive our communications. They're affirmatively taking that step and thereby creating our own audience. And there are costs with creating a party committee website, which is expressly approved in the 2016 J.
Well, that is the point I was going to ask next, which is whether there are fees associated with hosting a website and other web services that go along with maintaining that website and leasing a URL and things like that. Is that right?
Correct. It's actually quite costly. I review these agreements all the time as a practitioner in this space. You generally pay a vendor who will build the website, create the software, do the hosting. You pay for the domain name. You pay for ongoing updates to the website. There are a lot of costs involved.
And I just want to, I know this is made clear in your request and your comments, but I just want to make it very clear for the purposes of the meeting. The recipients of the text messaging program, and they opt in to the party committees. Their contact information is maintained by the party committees. And none of their contact information or the recipient's information is provided by the telecommunications vendors. Is that right? The telecommunications vendors are merely providing the mechanism for contacting them, but they aren't providing a recipient list to the party committees.
Exactly. And I think that's a really important point. We have to tell the carriers, these are the individuals and their phone numbers that are our audience. And now they send the text messages to them. At no point do the carriers provide us with names or contact information. So we are no way dependent on them for the list of people that we are communicating with.
And then my last question is, you know, as I said earlier, the regulations indicate that a party website is not a public communication. It's fair to say, I think, that determination doesn't depend on how many people visit the website.
Exactly.
If hundreds of millions of people visited the website, that doesn't make the website a public communication. Is that right?
Exactly. The core piece is that the audience is your audience that is seeking you out. Your popularity, if people happen to like your website, doesn't all of a sudden turn that into a public communication, which is the same with these programs. The fact that, you know, the committees have a large list is reflected only in the popularity of the program and the number of individuals that want to be part of the audience. But just like the number of viewers of a website or a Facebook page don't turn it into a public communication, I don't think it's fair or correct on the law to say that because we have a large number of subscribers, we now have turned into a public communication, because it is still fundamentally our own audience that is seeking out our text messages.
Thank you. Thank you for that. You know, as the commissioner who requested draft B and who edited draft B, I'll be supporting draft B. And I appreciate most of all, again, the very, very thorough written comments from you as the requesters about the drafts. I find that extremely helpful. I think it's something that should be encouraged in other AO requests down the line. I really appreciated getting those thorough responses. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. We appreciate the commission's time.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub.
Okay, one more question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the analogy to the website is not really very good, because people actually have to go to the website and click on it. Whereas once they've opted in to your text messaging, you're sending it to them. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. It just shows up on their phone. There's an opt-in argument on practically every form of public communication. I mean, if I'm watching something on an old-fashioned television show, if anybody ever still does that, and the commercial comes on, I can mute it. I can switch the channel. I can walk out of the room and get a sandwich. And many people do. If I decide to sit there and listen to the commercial, in a sense, I am opting into listening to that television commercial. And yet it's still a general public political advertising. The reason that that draft C mentions faxes, although I admit that not a lot of people are using faxes anymore, is that it does strike me as the most analogous form of communication to your text messaging program. It uses the phone lines, there's a per message fee, and like your text messages, you can't send more than 500 faxes to anybody unless they've opted in. In fact, you may not be able to send any faxes to people unless they've opted in. There is a similar opt-in requirement for faxes under other people's laws, under the communication laws, not under our laws, but there's a similar opt-in requirement in order to send people faxes as there is for the text messaging. So why does the opt-in requirement for faxes not take it out of the realm of general public political advertising when according to you, the opt-in requirement for text messaging does?
So I want to go back, if I can, first, Commissioner, to your first analogy, which is the individual who's watching the television program and they see the ad. This is fundamentally different from that, because the people opting in have opted into our communication, right? You're watching that TV program because you're watching the show. You are a subscriber, so to speak, of the TV channel and the show. The advertising, they're paying to access you because they don't otherwise have access to you, right? That's the whole point of advertising. That's not the case here at all. These individuals have expressly either texted our short code or gone on a website and given us their phone number to say, I want to receive your text messages to receive only our content. So it's just fundamentally different. And that difference is exactly why I think it's not a general public communication. With respect to faxes, I'm going to be honest, I don't know anything about the law that governs faxes. I started practicing law in 2014, so I don't know. So I can't tell you that I understand whether the same consent requirement applies to faxes. I could see an argument that if you're sending faxes to people and they have to opt in, that if I won't get into it. I'm going to leave to the commission one day to decide whether or not faxes are a general public communication or not. I don't have a opinion on it, to be honest, not completely understanding how mass faxing works.
Well, if I were to tell you, because I have looked this up, that just like text messaging, you have to get people's permission. They have to opt in to getting faxes. If I were to tell you that there was a law like that on the books, could that change your argument about how the opt-in feature takes text messaging out of the definition of general public political advertising?
if I have to go and collect people's consent to receive my faxes, then yeah, I think I'm creating my own audience at that point. I think it's unlikely because people don't really have faxes at their house, nor do they do we communicate over faxes anymore. So, but yes, in theory, yeah, if you have to go out and collect consent from individual people to get consent to fax them, sure. Whether or not the faxing fits within a different category of a general public communication, I don't know. I haven't considered the question beyond this exact moment. So it could be a public communication by means of another type of a public communication. But I think if you're creating your own audience, yes, you'd have a similar argument.
Well, the statute doesn't recognize that argument, not when it comes to faxes. And I would argue not when it comes to text messaging either. But thank you for that.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Let me poll colleagues. Thank you. So, are there any motions? Commissioner Cooksey put his hand down, so.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Commissioner Cooksey.
I guess I have one clarifying question, which is, I don't know if this is best directed at OGC, which is the procedure allowed for an absent colleague in an open meeting and whether Commissioner Walter will have the ability to submit any votes after the meeting or if this this is the only opportunity to submit votes.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Calvin. Go ahead, Mr. Calvert. I think you might be frozen. Oh, Ms. Lopez, this is the world of Zoom.
Start out here.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Yes, we can hear you, Mr. Calvert.
Thank you. I froze for a moment. Yes, the provisions of Directive 10 Part H are the same for open or closed meetings. So Commissioner Walter would have the opportunity to request that he be recorded in this matter, should he do so before midnight Eastern time tonight.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cooksey.
As a result of that, and not to get ahead of my colleagues or be too predictive, I think it makes most sense for Commissioner Weintraub to make her motion first.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. That was good thinking on your part. With that, with respect to the advisory opinion request from the DSCC and the DCCC to 2021-11, I move approval of agenda document 21-40-C, otherwise known as draft C.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Any discussion on this motion? None. I'll call the question. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
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 The motion fails with two voting in favor. Commissioner Weintraub and myself, and three voting against the motion, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor. Commissioner Walter will be able to enter votes before the closing night of business today. Well, not business, by 12 o'clock. Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In advisory opinion requests 2021-11 from DSCC and DCCC, I move approval of agenda document 21-40-B, which is draft B.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. Discussion on the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
No.
We will wait. The vote for Commissioner Walter would be determinative if he chooses to vote in approval. So this matter will be held over till that time that we can register his vote. Thank you very much to council. Thank you very much to OGC.